Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, we are live. It's the Anfield Wrap. It's Friday. Hope you're having a wonderful afternoon and you're looking forward to an action-packed weekend. And if you can't get up for this game, then there's a lot wrong with you. It's Liverpool-Manchester United on Sunday at Old Trafford. And to talk about all that and everything going on in the world of Liverpool this week, I've got Emma Sanders, I've got Mo Stewart, and I've got Damian Cavana. We're going to focus more on Manchester United-Liverpool in part four. We've also got a couple of inserts. We've got Neil speaking to Mark Gregory on his book More Than a Game, and we've got Michael Grace from Unemployable Promotions. That was easy for me to say. I was nearly unemployed myself then on Liverpool Irish Festival, talking about some events they've got going on and also the fantastic Liverpool Irish Festival in general. But I thought, part one, first of all, it might be nice to reflect a little bit on Atletico, Damien, because it was some win. Are we making enough of it? Are we shouting it from the rooftops? They don't lose there, do they? And we came into town and we did them.
I think that's a great question, that, because I don't think enough has been made of it. That is a sensational result. The fact that you used to Liverpool doing well, used to Liverpool coming out of that stadium with a cup, the fact that it's only a group game and they all still might get through, et cetera, does not take away from the fact that that was one hell of a team we had to beat. We don't get beat on their own pitch, and we went there and did the business. And there was no excuses. And we had a couple of players missing. We started great. You know, we went through some adversity. Other teams might have crumbled. This team didn't. So it was absolutely phenomenal. And a real statement, I think, by this team, by this club, to say, look, this is the sort of result that we're capable of in the second half of this tournament when it comes to knockout rounds. So shot right across the bows. I'm sure both coaches will have learned from that game about the gaps. Because defensively, I think both coaches have moaned about it a little bit. Because that's what you strive for excellence for. But what a fantastic win. It doesn't go down with one of those great knockout wins. You know, it's not totally unexpected. I certainly thought it was, you know, an even contest before the game. I was confident we wouldn't lose, but we more than did that. It was a brilliant result and it really set us up.
Yeah, it does set us up, Evan, and I agree with that weird statement. You know, Damien's caveat that it is just a group game, so it's not quite up there with some famous sort of knockout wins, just because of the importance, I think, is a fair one. But in terms of the performance, in terms of, you know, what it does say, and I would say we've made a statement in Europe generally this season, not just in the week, but also the fact that we're on 9 points. We did have the group of death that everyone sort of painted it as, not unreasonably. I mean, it looked very tasty sort of when it was drawn, but there's very few teams on 9 points, a handful of teams on 9 points so far, and Liverpool are in there, and people will be looking around, I'm sure, around Europe and saying, like, oh, Liverpool, they mean business this season in this tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, apologies if there is a delay. I am actually in a hotel, so I'm using hotel Wi-Fi. I think it was a real statement. I think that was probably the main takeaway point from it all, was the fact that it was kind of a bit of a reminder. You know, we were speaking at the beginning of the season about how pundits and, you know, fans of other clubs were sort of writing Liverpool off in terms of the Premier League title. And I think that there would have been plenty of clubs around Europe perhaps forgetting Liverpool's dominance in Europe as well. So I think the fact that, you know, they went to Atletico, put down a performance like that, you know, kind of a little bit of an inconsistent performance, but yet still come away with the win and still do it in the manner that they did on such a stage like that, I think was a real statement.
Yeah, a real statement, Mo, and, you know, like Damien says, puts us in a fantastic position in the group. I mean, I can't remember how many points I would have taken. Maybe no one was offering them me because that's not a real thing. But I'm sure I probably would have taken six from the first two games. I certainly would have took seven. I'm biting the metaphorical hand off for nine, Mo, because it puts us in a really, really good position, especially for two away games.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we've got
9 points already. We've got a 5-point lead, and then we've got 2 home games to come. So the chances are, if we win both those home games, I believe we top the group anyway. To be honest, it could be all over after the next game. That's the thing. If we win and the other result goes our way, we could not only be qualified, but top. So that means we'll have 2 fixtures to play with. But obviously, we've seen that before kind of work against us. So let's hold our horses on that particular thing. But you're right. In terms of a statement to everybody else, because in general, I think the rest of Europe probably still respected Liverpool more than England did because they saw less of us being terrible. I mean, as far as the rest of Europe is concerned, Liverpool were terrible. Well, they still got to the quarterfinals, didn't they? Okay, that's fair enough. So
they weren't watching Burnley at home in January.
No, thank God.
Lucky them.
Yeah, exactly. So I think in terms of our stature in Europe, that has remained. And obviously the levels of performance have returned as well. But it's weird. When we did the draw, we were kind of trying to talk it up and say that the draws where Liverpool have quote-unquote easy teams to play, we normally struggle through, it's a bit stodgy. And it's the ones where we've got to up our game week in, week out, where we do the best. And that's exactly what happens. And not only that, but it seems to be translating into league form. This, like, all competitions unbeaten record means that every time we step on the pitch, we know that we're facing a decent opponent and we know that we've got to be at our best. And it seems to be getting the best out of us as well.
Jürgen called it a dirty win, Damien, which I loved as a phrase. There wasn't enough dirty wins last season. There was a few dirty defeats, but not enough sort of dirty wins. And a return to that, you know, is more like it, because you can't always blow the other team off the park, especially when they're as tough at Atletico and they know all the tricks and everything you get sort of when you go there. So some dirty wins on top of the eye-catching ones are very welcome indeed.
Yeah, there was certainly some mucky and downright filthy defeats last season, wasn't it? It was flopping at times, wading through the mud. But yeah, it's about the resilience, isn't it? It's about Liverpool being able to win different types of games. And that's where I think we are the best in our league at that. I do think, for example, like Man City, there's no one can beat it. No one can give out a 7-goal spread like Man City. And once they've got a team on the ropes, it's over and it can really be ugly for the other team. But I think Liverpool can win different types of games. And that's the big thing. And that's why the Atletico win was such an important one, because it shows that Liverpool can go to Watford and not let them touch the ball, apart from when they have to kick off again after we score. And then they can go to a team like Madrid, who will give it the treatment, you know, time, waste, foul, gamesmanship, all within rights. You know, fair enough, you know, the crowd's fantastic, you know, all that. And it goes into the Lions then and still comes out. And you can feel like it was a bit of a roller coaster. You could say, oh, they might have got a result there. But by the same virtue, they'll be looking at us saying, Jesus, they're dangerous. Yeah. What are they going to be like when they've got everyone back? What are they going to be like when it all runs their way? So, yeah, if you win ugly, and I don't think that was winning ugly, that one. That wasn't like a boring one where we just tried to tough it out. But I do agree with the dirty analogy, yeah, because we didn't have complete control of the game. Right. And I think that might be what he's alluding to. But even in those instances where we haven't got complete control of the game, we've got enough about us collectively to stay in there. And we've got enough about us with the individuals we've got. I mean, look at Alisson. He was absolutely magnificent, wasn't he? And then you've got players who can score fantastic goals. You've got Mo Salah at the moment, who's running his own goal of the season competition this month. And that's what Liverpool have got. And they're the weapons that we've got that basically frighten everybody else. You know, man, you say the group of death. It was the group of death for the other three, because two of them are going out.
Absolutely love that. Is right. Damien mentioned Mo Salah. Damien mentioned Mo Salah there, Emma, and you know this one man, you know, competition for goal of the season. You know, only Salah is something that is people are having fun with online at the moment. It seems to be a bit of a sort of, you know, stock thing. But now we know only Salah has scored in 9 consecutive games for Liverpool. That is the latest there, only Salah. And he's a phenomenon, isn't he? He's absolutely brilliant. And he seems somehow to be getting better and better.
Yeah, and one of the things which I really love about Salah, which I think people doubted, not necessarily Liverpool fans, but, you know, outside of Liverpool, perhaps doubted in maybe his first or second season, was that he wasn't always kind of the centre of attention in terms of, like, the biggest stage, which is why I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can actually do on Sunday, because I think more and more now we're just seeing him be the man in all of the big games. And, you know, we're very blessed in this Liverpool side that we've got a number of world-class players. You know, you've got arguably the best right-back in the world, arguably the best keeper in the world, the best centre-back in the world, and it goes on and on. So when you are somebody like, you know, Mo Salah, it can be quite easy to just become part of that level. But for him to still elevate each season and for him to elevate it as an individual and also collectively within the team, I think is what is so impressive. It's so impressive for me. And yeah, I think it'll be really important for Liverpool on Sunday for him to step up in that big moment, because Man United as a team are nowhere near the level that Liverpool are collectively. But we know that they still do have a couple of individuals that can turn it on. But if Liverpool's individuals turn it on as well, then they've got absolutely no hope.
Absolutely, yeah, loads of comments coming in enjoying them. I like this one from Limping Monkey, who says Liverpool winning Atletico, dirty and run wrong on so many levels, but like Mo's tash, it just feels right.
Hang on a minute, is that meant to be a compliment or not? I'm still not sure.
I'd say it might be the old-fashioned backhanded one. Yeah,
I mean, to be fair, I'm kind of going a bit early because I know it's still October, but yeah, I'm just trying a few things out.
Just see what works. You get it in. See you there. Only Salah's better facial hair than Mo. I would also sort of agree with that.
Now we're back level.
In terms of that, you know, I said at the top, Mo, you know, are we talking up this result enough and this performance enough? One of the reasons why maybe we're not is that there's been a surprising to me amount of online discourse about our midfield. Everyone seems to want to have a big chat about our midfield, about Naby Keita, about you know, what Naby Keita's doing, what he isn't, you know, and the people using that as their a stick to beat Jordan Henderson and James Milner with. It feels like we always need something to complain about, even when things are going well.
Yeah, it's really tiring, isn't it? I mean, come on. Like, I feel sorry for Naby Keita simply because no one is talking about his goal. Like, can we talk about that goal, please? From the edge of the area that went in top bin. And it's the second volley that he's put in the top corner this season. So, like, I mean, you can kind of run yourself around in circles. The fact of the matter is, no one looked at that performance and the way that Atletico were able to get chances quite easily in the first half and say, that was perfect. That's exactly how we wanted it to be. But that does not necessarily mean to say that, as discourse normally dictates, we have to distill it all down to one person. I think no coach will ever think that, there are some very, very small examples, but the majority of the time, no goal is the fault of one man. It's maybe one mistake and then another and then another and then another. And when you've got multiple mistakes on top of each other, that's normally what happens when you get a goal. Sometimes that's structural because you're seeing things happening again and again. Sometimes it's just the opposition doing something good. I don't think Jurgen Klopp's going to overreact on that. I think, if I'm being honest, the things that Naby Keita doesn't do well, i.e. he seems to dwell on the ball a little bit, concentration tends to be a little bit of an issue, those things could be also an issue at Old Trafford. So that has to come into play a certain amount. But also, on the flip side of that, I don't know whether or not he's carrying an injury or not, but we have noticed Jordan's energy levels drop before halftime considerably on more than one occasion. So I can see why people are making these decisions and conversations, but the reality is that in the wider scheme of everything, these are small problems. We have not been beaten for 21 games. So you can get upset and angry about all those things all you want, but they don't matter as much as the fact that Liverpool are really good right now.
Yeah, for me, Damien, you know, the midfield wasn't quite working as a unit, I don't think, on Wednesday. But I take Mo's point completely that they've got really, really talented players who can make, you know, anyone sort of, you know, look ordinary when they sort of turn it on. Yeah. But he makes the change at half time. He goes for a more defensive minded midfielder. It's difficult to say, you know, how what an impact that had, really, because the red card sort of so soon after it, really. You know, they could have continued to cause us problems, but then obviously that the red card sort of changes the game. But, you know, I'm looking at it at the, you know, on Wednesday night and thinking that's a midfield where Fabinho is not deemed, you know, quite ready to start. You know, with the without Thiago, Curtis Jones isn't quite there. I mean, Harvey Elliott started the season midfield, you know, he's injured, so does There's plenty of quality in midfield for Liverpool at the moment, and it just feels to me that we need to remember that and remember that in some games, like Mo says, the opposition, you know, we're going to look, when they've got talented players, going to look dangerous as well.
Yeah, there's a couple of good points you made, Dave. You've just gone through a list of players who aren't available for us or haven't been as available as much as we'd like. So there's the first thing. Naby's such a talented player, but he hasn't quite hit those heights that we were expecting from him, and so that invites criticism. The players around him have all played numerous games and won all kinds of trophies. He hasn't quite played as many games to prove that. And so, you know, people are understandably a little bit cautious about that sort of thing. The fact that Liverpool made sure that he took advantage of the other team going down to 10 men is a good thing. I'm a great believer in what you've just said there as well, by the way. I believe most football, a lot of football fans should pay half price for their tickets because they only watch one team. And their team and their team either played well and won, or their team played rubbish and lost. And you do happen to have the small matter of going into the Lions' Den with a fantastic team which has won big trophies that might actually be good and have done their own way at exploiting you on the back of international weekends when you quite haven't got all your first choice players available. And we still navigated the win. To me, the jury's out on Naby. I think he seems like a likeable guy. He's not on the pitch as often as we'd like him. You know, so he's got things to prove. But what a goal. What a goal. And it's not his first one either. So, you know, we either encourage... I don't mean blind encouragement. You know, you've got to look at the good that's in him and hopefully play to those strengths. In life, some people talk, concentrate too much on what people can't do rather than what they can. And the key here is, no one, even above Naby himself, no one deserves Naby to be a success more than Jürgen, because he has really stuck with him and he's really put him in some high-profile games. And the lad's running out of time, really, to repay that and the fact that you want him to take it by the scruff of the neck. And so I understand, you know, it's not like I'm sitting on the fence. I am genuinely undecided because I agree he's got the ability, but he's got to be on the pitch. And when he's on the pitch, he's got to prove it. But we're talking about Liverpool being at the highest level in world football of the trophy. We're going to win. We're trying to win the hardest league possible in the world. We're trying to win the hardest international club competition. So, of course, if there's a shortcoming that might be minute and a player who might be fantastic for somebody else, he's going to get look through a different lens for us. And I think you've got to put that in context sometimes and look at Liverpool struggling along right up by the top of the league, unbeaten, scored more goals than anybody else, 9 points in Europe. You know, these are first world problems, aren't they? And so there's got to be a bit of a level to that. But going back to it, yeah, you know, we navigated a very difficult win. And on the back of international weekends, when you've got various players with various levels of training, match fitness, flying in here, there and everywhere, that was an extremely difficult one. And so I would indulge all of those lads who have done very well for us and say 10 out of 10 for getting us the other side of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just want to touch on the goalkeeper as well. Emma, he is one that no one is on the fence on, I don't think. You know, he's been a fantastic player for Liverpool ever since he came in, really. He really sort of proved himself, proved his worth the other night when we needed them, when they had a... You know, some dangerous moments when they sort of managed to sort of get through on goal, he was there. And, you know, he's a superstar, isn't he?
Yeah, it's. I think I tweeted actually afterwards saying that when those kind of players step up on the big moments, so elite goalkeepers in the big games, it's just a bit of a reminder, really, of how important, you know, elite goalkeepers can be. Because I think people forget... you know, it's not just his goal saving, it's not just his, you know, his communication, but it's also what he can do in terms of his distribution and then setting off the attack and how important that is in terms of, you know, Liverpool in the transition and how quickly we can overturn possession and build from the back. And he is absolutely the number one in that kind of, you know, in that sort of focal movement. So there is so much more to Alisson's game, which I think we're just kind of so used to now that we take it for granted a little bit. There was a period where, you know, Liverpool didn't really have a good goalkeeper. And then Alisson has come in and he is now, you know, in my opinion, still the best in the business. So you go from kind of one extreme to the other. And when he pulls off saves like that, it's almost routine now. That I think that's why people don't talk about it enough, because we're just so used to him doing that and stepping up when he needs to, that, you know, I think even the players on the pitch, you know, even the defenders in front of him know that, yes, they can probably play a little bit more risky, because if they do give away a chance, then they've got the best goalkeeper in the world stood behind them. And I think that massively helps in terms of their own confidence and their own, I guess, ability to play risky football. And when you play risky football with world-class players, which Liverpool do more often than not, then that's when you can devastate teams. And I think that that all comes from having somebody at one end of the pitch who is the best in the world to the other end of the pitch in Mo Salah, who is the best in the world. So everything in between is then so much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really good point by MMO in that, you know, you imagine those defenders, you know, however short did they feel? You know, you've got to see that Kelleher did pretty well at the weekend against Watford as well, albeit a quieter afternoon, obviously, than Alisson had. But, you know, they want the main man there, don't they? And it must be so reassuring if you're Virgil van Dijk, you know, coming back after a bit of a break to look back and see the holy goalie and just think, yeah, everything's going to be all right.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. When I look in the mirror every morning and I see this, I am reminding of you a little bit. I've been if I could just translate some of that into my world. But no, there's just, he's in a class of his own, and this is kind of provable. I think it was Dan Kennett put up some stats, and it was talking about passing percentage, talking about shot stopping, and talking about his ability to be a sweeper keeper. So basically coming out, anticipating attacks and cutting them off. And there's like tangible stats for all of them. He is the only one who is elite in all three. The only goalkeeper in the entire world who is elite in all three. And that's something that probably doesn't get recognized well. It's not just the fact that he can do that. It's he can do all of it as good as anyone. And so when you've got someone like that, and I mean, obviously last season that we know that he went through it on and off the pitch. So to see him back to himself, back to being someone who just exudes that calmness. And there are times when there's a bit of a calm kind of vortex between him and Virgil where they're both too cool and they sometimes get themselves into a bit of a pickle because of it. But those things happen very small. I mean, my heart can't take them. But in general, having those two there is so good. Even in the white hot atmosphere, something like the Wanda, like you say, there have been times we were on the rack at times in that game when they came back to 2-2 before they got for the red card. There was a real feeling where it was like, oh, you know, sometimes when you feel like your team could concede and then it could get away from you. And he just would not let it. He was just that absolute wall. So it's going to give the defense confidence. It's going to give the attack confidence as well. It means that we can go into tight games, big games, level at half time and still think, you know what, we're probably still going to win this game.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The confidence that comes from having elite footballers at both ends of the pitch. Fantastic stuff. Hope you enjoyed that. Coming up, we're obviously going to talk about Liverpool's huge game against Manchester United on Sunday. But before then, we got those two inserts I mentioned before. Neil speaking to Mark Gregory about his book More Than a Game, and also Michael Grace from Unemployable Promotions on Liverpool Irish Festival. So if you listen and there's a podcast, you're going to get that now. But if you're listening live, you get us straight in to Manchester United. So you know what's coming up. Up the Reds.
I am joined for one of these author chats that you know I very much enjoy doing by Mark Gregory, whose book, More Than a Game, Saving Football from Itself, is a slightly serendipitously started project, I suspect, and I'll talk to Mark about that, but it is about reworking the way in which football works. Mark, first and foremost, your background is that you were chief economist for Ernst & Young. You've worked with football clubs, you've worked with football club community projects. You've been doing this for 10 years, if not more.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I've been an economist for sort of nearly four decades across all of industry, not just football. Football actually is obviously my passion, but something work-wise I've come to pretty late, you know, as the football has become content and so suddenly had a value to people outside of football, that's when business got involved in it, right?
You know? Yeah, that is what it's all about. Within the book, you firstly, I love the extent to which you wear your Stoke City heart on your sleeve by using Stoke as an example in everything you possibly can.
Yeah,
it's an unashamed thing that moves through the book. But within the book, part of what the genesis of it, it's really interesting because I get the impression you've almost had to rewrite it three times. There's been you've started it and then COVID hits. You're getting through COVID, Project Big Picture hits. You get through Project Big Picture, European Super League hits, and then the knock-on effect of that is there's the Crouch report, the Crouch review, sorry, that's currently being started. Is that the case? How long have you actually been working on the book for?
Yeah, so really it started sort of at the end of 2017, as you'll see, you know, in the book, and it really was provoked by Marko Arnautović when he left Stoke, you know, and he sort of said he was moving to West Ham, who were a more ambitious club, and that kicked off a whole thing. And then he played in the game that almost relegated Stoke. And after that, I'm like, what happened here? Have I missed something? You know, and I hadn't been angry about it at the start. So it started as a frustration. it became more of a passion in terms of the things I found out drove me forward. But as you say, got to COVID, I was pretty happy with where I was. And then you had to stop, right? Because you had no idea what the consequences would be of that. And actually, in a way, it was what I was saying at that point, which was everything that could have gone right for football in the Premier League era has gone right for football, the growth of gambling, you know, the TV competition, etc. And I was sort of the view that if there was a shock, football wasn't well placed. And guess what? We had a shock and it wasn't well placed. Got through that, sort of just starting to see the way forward, and Project Big Picture hit, you know, and it's like, oh my goodness, all of my worst fears are now realised. You know? And then, but actually that was helpful in terms of adding more weight, if you like, to the arguments that things need to change. And then the Super League came along, which was just out of nowhere. Well, it wasn't out of nowhere, but in terms of its impact, it really changed things. And you mentioned the Crouch Review, and I think Project Big Picture plus the Super League have actually changed the opportunity for fans to shape the game they want. Because, yes, the government had mentioned in its manifesto a fan-led review, but it wasn't happening, right, yeah, until the Super League. And days later, it's happening. So for me, I've had to rewrite it a few times, but I now think the opportunity for change is better than it was sort of 18 months ago.
I think, firstly, on the opportunity, but also on the fact that change was required. The underlying issues, I think, have still not been given proper sort of intellectual discussion or weight. You quote the oft-quoted, not least by me, statistic of, you know, in 17-18, I think it was, Championship clubs' wages to turnover averages, yeah, 107%, averages, yeah, 107%. You know, the extent to which you discuss the cliff edges within the book, these are things that were there. They're not COVID things. Absolutely. They were there, and they've been there for years.
Absolutely. And what I've tried to do is just explain where they come from. And I think, you know, people, you hear everyone talk about parachute payments. Yeah. You know, and parachutes are a symptom of a problem. They're not the problem in itself. Clearly, they have impacts. Yeah. But actually, it's because there's such a massive cliff edge between the two divisions. And the incentive to chase that money at the top is such, you will take risks. Look at Aston Villa. You know, their numbers, if they hadn't got promoted, yeah, they literally had bet the shop on getting promoted in that three-year window. If they hadn't done, you know, they would have been in sort of the states that we've seen with Bolton and other clubs, where they just would have had to cut their cloth dramatically.
Within that, then, one of the core questions then becomes how you begin to reverse a lot of these processes. The review, I think, is an aspect of it. What I think is interesting, where, not to give away the conclusion, we will have a further chat and we'll talk through conclusions to an extent, but what I think you actually end up is a combination of some really, and I don't mean this disparagingly, some quite sort of small-C conservative positions and a couple of really quite radical ones, the redistribution of the money being really quite radical, but looking to work within existing frameworks elsewhere. I felt within the sort of the debate around this, there's been a lot of people determined to say 50 plus one will sort it out, fan-owned clubs will sort it out, all that sort of stuff. Your position, not least because your background is, it's exceptionally difficult to introduce new regulation.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so for me, you know, the starting point is to accept football is the way it is because choices have been made. You know, it isn't by accident we've got here. And but those have never been explicit in terms of, certainly fans have never been at the table in those discussions. And often a lot of the clubs haven't been at the table. So start with what we want to do with the game. You know, what are our objectives in terms of competition, sustainability, grassroots, and then think about solutions that fit with that. And certainly the money goes with that. For me, then you know, the fan-led review can get to a position, but that will evolve over time. And that's where I think you look at the regulatory structure. And as you say, so I've worked with a lot of regulators. I worked with BT for 15 years as a consultant when Ofcom was established. You know, and it was a nightmare of trying to put detail on the theory. So, you know, it was always evolving and it ended up with lots of court cases. And actually for the operators, it became a sensible thing to do, to go to court, because even if you lost, you could delay. Yeah. So the risk is we create something that's quite out of the control of football. So my sort of view is we do need independent regulation, in terms of regulation being independent of clubs and not having a stake in any of the decisions that regulator makes. But that doesn't have to be a separate body. It could be the FA. It could be an existing regulator. I mean, I talked about Ofcom, and they've done all the kind of media sports regulation. So think about that. But then you've got to put a whole set of other checks and balances around it. And for me, that would be support of directors, proper owners and directors, an ombudsman, so fans have got somewhere to go to. So lots of different sort of measures that mean hopefully you've got more control over outcomes.
On the one of the core things that you say quite early in the book, it is this idea that any changes have now got to be fit for purpose for the 21st century. I think that the what you're not arguing for, this, not within the book, is the idea of trying to get the genie back in the bottle around the Premier League or anything like that. I think that again is something which at times there is a desire, isn't there, I think, for people to, you know, use all of our yesterdays. You discuss within there the idea that, you know, replica kits you weren't even aware of were a thing, and then suddenly they are a thing, and they're a huge sort of, or can be a significant revenue stream for clubs. It's important, isn't it, to have the discussion in the now rather than try to say, no, it was better in 1991.
Yeah, you know, and I think romantically I started out trying to get back to the football when I grew up, you know, my sort of shoot league ladders and all those things where anyone might be top of the old first division. But yeah, and I think we have to look at that, which is I suspect the domestic TV market is maxed out. You look at BT and Sky, they're unlikely to keep going head-to-head in the way they are. And yes, we hope Amazon and others will come in, but not at the scale we've seen. Gambling, I think, is a big part of the story where there's been a huge amount of money into the game. And I'm not a ban gambling or think, you know, we have to completely crack down, but you have to accept, you know, Chinese gambling sponsors are probably not going to be turning up with the volume of money they had. And the world's changed, right? I think we are seeing, you know, an anti-globalisation drive, good or bad, and that will impact English football, which is the most global game, benefits the most. So I think you have to put it in terms of society and the likely economic outlook and sort of work from that, not on where we have been.
And also, within there as well, one of your arguments is to work towards 2030. I think one of the other sort of frustrating parts of this discussion has been ongoing from a lot of people is pretty much, well, what can we do in the next 6 weeks? Yeah. It's almost felt a bit like that. It is this, there needs to be, whatever we do next has to be a framework. For me, one of the most important things I think that can come out of the Crouch review, which I'm not as optimistic as you about, is the idea that let's get a date in for another one. That almost have, we probably will need to take stock of where we are in 20 years, because that's one of the, you know, the thing I always say is that we're now closer to, it's now further away, sorry, from the start of the Premier League than it was from when Shankly wins his first title at Liverpool. Yeah. That's how mad these times are. I think we've got to really be thinking, no, what do we want in 6 years, not what do we want tomorrow?
Yeah, we're not going to change it overnight, right? It's embedded over a long period of time. And even if we change the distribution of money, you know, there will still be clubs with stronger playing squads at this point. And even a salary cap, presumably you'd have, you know, holidays or grandfathering of existing contracts. So it's going to take at least a contract cycle before you see a real change, which is probably four seasons, if you like, on that. So I completely agree. I think halfway to 2030, we might see where we've got to. And I you know, I was kind of iffy about the World Cup bid because they've clearly not been great in the past. But I think giving us all a target to work towards and something at the end where we can say we do have an inclusive, diversified, competitive, sustainable game would be something to hold people's feet to the fire with.
Excellent stuff. It is Mark Gregory. It is more than a game, saving football from itself. It's very, very good indeed. It is in all the obvious places people buy books, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can get it from all the places you might want to get your books from. I like Hive, but then, you know, I'm hip in that. So, you know, you might choose something else. But anyway, thank you very much to Mark. We'll be doing a longer conversation about a lot of the thematic stuff within the book on Tour Player across the next week or so. But it's been a pleasure as ever.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
And it's John Gibbons for Tour Live. And I'm joined over Zoom by Michael Grace, who's over in Ireland. And we're here to talk about the Liverpool Irish Festival, which is an event that we always try and promote at the Anfield Rapids. It's a fantastic fun week or so in Liverpool with lots and lots of things going on. And to talk about some of those events, I've got Michael on the Zoom with us. So, Michael, thanks a lot for coming on.
How are you doing, John? Thanks a lot for having me.
So, just a little bit on Liverpool Irish Fest. You know, first of all, it's been going for a long time over in Liverpool. Is it something that's on the radar over there? And is it something that people, you know, look forward to getting involved with if they can?
I think definitely, like, I suppose, you know, everyone knows the kind of links between the two places and everything. And it's something that's kind of always there. And especially for, you know, we kind of started having a look at it because as we were going to Liverpool already through football loyalties and everything, you know, it was kind of like we had an extra kind of a thing with like, oh, I'd love to do some gigs over there, you know. And even I remember from 4 or 5 years ago being in different bands, kind of like sussing it out, just to kind of like mail and especially Emma Smith got back to me to like even then to kind of say maybe we could get you in somewhere, you know. And it was even the idea for them to have Irish artists coming over when it was, you know, still just us cold calling them at the time and everything, but they were still open to it. It didn't happen at the time, but you know, we've kind of been in touch that long, and people are, yeah, people are, especially within the music realm, they're very kind of aware of the festivals, especially the Irish festivals in the UK, and that and the Liverpool Irish Fest is definitely a big one on the radar. Yeah.
Well, you guys are doing an event. You've been paired together with Melatonin, who are friends of ours as well. I've done quite a lot with Dave, who's not bad for a Leeds fan, has to be said. good lad for a Leeds fan. And yeah, this event you're putting together is really cool. It's two acts from over in Cork. It's two acts over in Liverpool, you know, who I know pretty well, Seafoam Green and Karen Taylor, who I've had on the radio over the years and stuff and have met, and are lovely people, but incredibly... you know, inspirational sort of artists and things like that, and sing just sort of beautifully. So you must be delighted, first of all, with the acts that you're bringing over, but also the ones you're sharing the stage with.
Oh yeah, big time. Like definitely when, and again, Emma's Width comes in. As of say last year, we put on a gig, kind of like an online showcase, we'll say, you know, of all the acts on our roster. And at the time we were kind of saying, you know, because if things ease up before then, maybe we'll get you over kind of thing, you know, and we'll get to do it. But we ended up doing a kind of a virtual showcase for it, where we put on our acts, and that was called From Here. And Emma paired us with Melatonin then, and Dave and everyone. And the whole thing was, okay, well, how about you share our stuff? We'll share your stuff, and we'll kind of put it on as one thing. So this year is a chance to get a kind of an in-person version of that. So it's From Here to There this year. So yeah, two of our own acts. We have Sarah Ryan and Mita Houlihan, both great artists that are really kind of starting to move within the Irish scene and everything. And yeah, to be paired with Karen and Seafoam is brilliant. Like, we really can't believe how lucky we are with it. So can't really wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic night. It's Friday, October 29th, the night before Brighton at home. So anyone who's over for the weekend for the Brighton game, or obviously people sort of local, you know, it's going to be a good little warm-up for the Brighton game for all of us, including you.
Including me.
Please have a ticket.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's almost the perfect weekend, we were kind of saying.
And even District, which is down in the Baltic, which is a really cool venue. I think the sound in there is always fantastic. And I think District is run by musicians, and you can tell sort of when you're in there, the care they put over everything. And, you know, it's, you know, good bar there as well. So people, you know, come down, enjoy themselves, you know, whether you know, aware of the artists or not, you know, it's a stellar lineup, and you'll walk out. You know, I'm confident, even if you don't know anyone, you'll walk out with at least one new favorite, you know, probably even two or three.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of we kind of work a lot with other companies in Ireland as well, where we might put on a couple of our acts with a couple of their acts, and you get this whole thing where it allows people to kind of like discover one of the other acts. You know, you come for one, but then it's kind of like, oh, while you're there, you pick up certain other acts and you leave a fan of a new artist then, you know, which is very cool, especially when it's either side of the Irish Sea, you know.
Yeah, no, it should be a great night. So tickets are available now. What's the best way of people getting them if they want to sort of come down?
Best way, well, it's on Eventbrite. You'll find it. From Here to There is the name of the event. And it's got a Facebook event. Yeah, you'll find, if you look up Unemployable Promotions or Melatonin or the Liverpool Irish Festival on any of the socials, really, you'll find it, because we're all posting away and trying to get as many bodies in there as we can. So
yeah, do check out generally the Liverpool Irish Festival. As I say, it's a fantastic thing that happens every year when we're allowed. It's running this year from the 21st to the 31st of October. If you just go to the LiverpoolIrishFestival.com, so LiverpoolIrishFestival.com. I was desperate to put a bit in there, but it doesn't exist. That's why I was being so careful. I'll say it one more time, LiverpoolIrishFestival.com. Go to there, you'll be able to get links to everything that's going on. But as I say, I would encourage everyone to come to the From Here to the festival. I've not heard the Irish acts yet, but I will sort of you know, check them out. But if they're nearly as good as Karen and Seafoam Green, which I'm sure they are, then you're in for a hell of a night. But listen, Michael, thanks so much for coming on. And yeah, maybe we'll see you for a beer next week.
Yeah, sounds good. That sounds good. Yeah, looking forward to it. So thanks very much for having me anyway.
Okay, we'll go again. I've just remembered everyone can listen to that bit. We're still getting used to this tour live stuff, but we're enjoying ourselves because it's a Friday and Liverpool play Manchester United this weekend. And so, yeah, as I said before, if you can't get up for that, then you need to go and do something else. I'm still joined by Emma Sanders from her Travel Tavern setting. I've got Damian Cavana, who was brilliantly described in the comments as a logical bastard. Before. I've never seen those two words paired together. There it is. I love it when David is on. Another logical bastard on here. Big up. There we are. I've never seen those words there before.
Thanks, limping monkey. I'll grow a muscle for you.
And of course, most of it, more records than the KGB. And
they're all bangers as well.
I wouldn't expect anything else. You can hear them all in Motel at some point. I'm not sure when Mo is next on, but he'll be coming soon.
Tonight. Literally tonight.
There you are.
It's like literally 6 hours from now.
6 hours. Get your skates on. Everyone, get in the shower. Get your disco pants ready and get down and have a little bit of a boogie. Just want to mention a couple of things before we do the United thing. We've got these lovely mugs on sale. I'm showing them to our live people. It is. People have wanted the famous get in. I'm struggling here. The famous get in phrase that Robbo shouted at the end of it, or the start, sorry, of a post-match pint on something for a while. So we put them on a mug. So that is available to buy on the Anfield Wrap shop. We've also got the new Mo Salah top, which has just popped up on the live as well. They are selling like hotcakes. So I would hurry if you want one, because we can't get them in fast enough. We can't. Our friends at Wild Thang are printing like fiends up in Bootle, trying to get them all sort of done. But they're going really well, those. So if you want a Mo Salah top, it is the hottest item of this autumn, it appears. There you are. I think I can put my head on it if I'm careful here.
Do we get any freebies?
Ever, anything for you. Yes. There we are. I'll bring one to the Clipper next time we're there.
Yes.
But anyway, enough of the nonsense. It's Man United on Sunday. I'll start with you, Emma. It's a big game, isn't it? We talked about statement wins before in Europe. Liverpool probably haven't had one in the league yet. We've had some good wins, but we haven't beaten a team above 14th in the table this season. Manchester United, say what you like about them, are higher than 14th. So a statement win in the Premier League to follow up a statement win in the Champions League will be very nice indeed.
Very nice. Very nice indeed. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think it's really important as well in terms of not just obviously bragging rights and the statement, but actually in terms of, you know, the points and being in the table, because the draws with Chelsea and City we're fine, but City, perhaps in that kind of, I sort of described it before on here as a little bit in my eyes as a kind of a three-horse race, I think, sort of between City, Chelsea and Liverpool at the moment. And City are probably just ahead in terms of head-to-heads in that three-horse race. So if Liverpool can get all 3 points at United, then that sort of, in my eyes, I think then absolutely eliminates them from any kind of conversation quite definitively. In terms of getting anywhere near that top three for me, I think there's more at stake than just obviously the natural rivalry and the statement side of it. I think in terms of points, Liverpool really need to go and keep their foot on the gas and sort of stay right up there at the table.
I'm loving this talk of eliminating Man United from the conversation. I wish we could have done that in the 90s a little bit more, but you know, I mean. Emma's right, isn't it? Beat them on Sunday. They can't really, you know, say with a straight face they're in a title challenge.
I don't think they're saying it now. I mean, what it is it proves that we're not their problem. Emma's right. We aren't their problem. And the thing that intrigues me the most about this game at Old Trafford is it's kind of a mix of the last two games, because you've got the atmosphere and all of the hoopla around it that you got from the Atletico game. And then you've got a team who aren't as good as Liverpool, have massive gaps in the midfield. And if we just play our team and play our football, we could embarrass them like we did Watford. So it's a little bit like a mix of those things. Mentality-wise, I don't think we're ever going to really go into the game with that attitude, because I think Klopp and the players feel that's a little bit of disrespecting Man United in the history, and that's not something they've ever done. I wish they would, though, because we are that better than them. I really do. I really just wish they went in there like, this is just Watford, lads. Or maybe not Watford, maybe Leeds. And say, you know what? Like, it's going to be a feral atmosphere. we'll keep the ball for the first 25 minutes, shut them down, get a first goal. They'll be a little bit downtrodden. Keep them downtrodden, get the second goal before halftime, have a load of fun in the second half. Like, we can do that. I mean, the reality is we probably won't do that, but we can. I want us to go on that pitch acting like we will do that.
Yeah, I'd love to see that too, Damien. There was a comment earlier in the show, and sorry, it's chopped off my screen now, so I can't remember who it was, but someone saying that when we've played United and Everton, they said in the past maybe we've shown them a little bit too much respect. Liverpool need to show Man United the necessary amount of respect, but that shouldn't be too much. You know, Liverpool are the better team, and I'd love to see a bit of a strut from our boys on the Old Trafford pitch on Sunday, and I think the value for it.
Yeah, oh, Defo, I mean, we're capable of anything there.
There he is, Jimmy Allen.
There you go, yeah. I mean, good shout, Jimmy. I mean, but the thing is, you know, if you look at those two teams on their own pitch, no team hates us any more than them. And be under, you know, no illusion that their fan groups can create a fantastic atmosphere. And at a time, you mentioned the 90s before, at a time when we were half the team that Man United had, we were still able to do them at Anfield because of the unity of the crowd with the team and players playing at their very best. So I don't think Manchester United have got a great team, but they've certainly got some great players. But we've got some great players and we're a great team. So, and we've proved, we've been into Lions' Dens before, you know, as been mentioned on here. Now, this is one of the ones, an old manager of mine who I used to enjoy playing for, he said, hey, let's respect them. Let's absolutely respect them and let's go out there and respect them and then walk all over them. And I think Liverpool are capable of doing that as well. What you've got to be mindful of the fact that if it goes toe-to-toe and their best players are inspired by a fanatical crowd on a Sunday afternoon and it's really sticking in their claw that we could beat a team going right past them here, then they could start well and we could get embarrassed. That can happen. Yeah. But if we go out there and we are first to every ball, if we are first to every second ball, if we keep our shape and we make no mistakes, they'll make one. And we've got the players to punish them. And that controlled aggression attitude is Liverpool's strategy here. And if it wasn't Man United, and if it wasn't Goodison Park, for example, I'd be very confident about us Liverpool being able to go there and dictate that. But the crowd does come into it. Yeah, I've got to say that. But Liverpool, if we can ride the waves early on, if we can meet the challenge. And what was key was, what came out from the Watford game, was that Man City were brilliant at Anfield the other week. Absolutely brilliant. And I think they'd have beat anybody else in the world that day, bar us. And we did well, and we showed that resilience I was talking about earlier about coming back. Well, at Watford, it was clear that the team had got the message. And in Madrid, we start from the first whistle. We don't start from half time. And as long as we do that and we start from the first whistle, we've got more than enough. And if we don't, and they start faster than us, then we can be in a whole load of trouble. This is, it's a fantastic game. But Ferguson himself, you know, he used to say about these things, play the game, not the occasion. Now, Liverpool are in that. Liverpool are at least as good as those teams that Alex Ferguson controlled in his pomp. And Liverpool are capable of doing that. So I am confident that we can go there and we can go toe to toe with them physically. And as long as we don't leave too many gaps and don't turn it into a basketball game early on, we'll get in. And once we get in, it's going to be a long time in the ring for them. If we're in front, we're going to do them properly.
A long time in the ring. I love that analogy. Did you watch them the right time? You probably did because it's your job and that.
I thought
it was, you saw the good, the bad and the ugly from United in terms of the players on the pitch, but also the crowd as well. You know, they were booing them off at half time, which happens when you're 2-0 down, you know, in a game that you need to win. But then when they got one back, you know, the crowd sort of really got behind the team, and it felt like that first goal sort of lit a fire and the crowd sort of went with it. And that's what Liverpool need to be careful of, really, is that not to give Manchester United any encouragement. And I think that's what sort of Damien was referring to there, is the idea that, you know, we can silence them and we can remind them early on just how much better Liverpool are. But also, you know, if they get a bit of wind under the sails and they get a bit of encouragement, you know, they've got good players and you know, it is a big crowd, you know, and they can make a difference.
Yeah, Damien was spot on. I think it's something that I've kind of said now for a season or two, is that I don't think you can disrespect some of United's individual quality. I think, you know, we haven't really spoken about Bruno Fernandes, and we all know what he can do as well.
Oh, he's injured. Don't have any head. along with Harry Maguire, who's played twice already, he was meant to be out the Liverpool game.
Yeah, well, there we go. It's the classic. The whole team is injured ahead of Liverpool. But yeah, I don't think, you know, I perhaps I don't think anyone is obviously surprised by the quality that Ronaldo has brought, but I'm perhaps a little bit surprised by, and I don't know why, but I almost didn't expect him to single-handedly carry the team through so many wins as he's done so far. And actually, I don't think you can underestimate the kind of idolism that he has within Old Trafford. And if the crowd get behind him personally, and, you know, he's a guy who wins at all costs, then obviously, you know, those individual moments of brilliance are going to be a threat. And it's just a case of Liverpool making sure that those individual threats are limited, so don't let him get the ball. But by doing that, the best way to not let Cristiano get the ball is by playing Liverpool's strengths, which is, you know, getting the ball out wide, getting it to Trent Alexander-Arnold, therefore, you know, Ronaldo spending most of the time in his own half. And Trent is exploiting that space, which, you know, which he's leaving him behind. So I think Liverpool are at a time now where they go to Old Trafford with enough world-class players that if they're on their A game and they're playing towards their strengths, then that actually kind of automatically diminishes United's strengths because they're having to defend. And, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it was the other way around. It was, you know, Liverpool having to sort of defend United's strengths, whereas Liverpool individually now are that good that they can afford to kind of forget about the Ronaldos almost, as long as they keep the ball and play absolutely to their own ability. So, yeah, I completely agree with Damien. If Liverpool turn up on the day, Liverpool are winning that game of football and that's it, end of.
Yeah, I just got me excited at the idea of our fullbacks having a lovely afternoon at Old Trafford. They got to do a bit more tracking than what they did against Leicester, that is for sure. In terms of team selection for Liverpool, then, Mo, what would you go for? There was a question before that I've lost again. Not very good at this. Someone saying, would you go for Jota or Firmino? There he is, Nandan. Someone's flying for me here. I think it's
like there's someone doing it for you.
And it's a good job, isn't it, Mo? Yeah. Christ. I think it's Spanish Mick doing bits next door. would you start Firmino or Jota? Mo, I will say I'll be shocked if it's not the same front three that started the last two games.
Yeah, me too. I think they've both got a part to play. I think one of the best things about the two of them is that they do different things and offer different problems to a defence. I think Jota is going to be more of an advantage when you've got tired defenders, and they are going to be tired because, as you said, as whoever it was said, they're definitely going to have to press more than Leicester. Not only because of the fact that it's Liverpool, not only because of the fact that the crowd's going to be on their back, but because literally every single media outlet has been talking about how little pressing they do and how bad they've looked. There's no way they're going to let that stand. Even Ronaldo himself, he's going to put in a few extra three-yard sprints. I think he's putting a lot more three-yard sprints because that's the whole point. The reason why he's able to win the games late on is because he's done nothing earlier. Like, make him work. Like, I know that he looks good, but he's still 36. So we've seen that if we can make him work early on in the game, he's going to be less effective at the end of the game. So that would be our tactic for me, 100%. But yeah, in terms of Firmino, I think that he's got that intelligence. So I think United are going to try and be organised. They're going to try and stay back and not give Liverpool a sniff. Firmino is the king at doing that. He's just able to draw them into clumps. So we saw it against Watford again. There were so many times where there was three Watford players around him and then the ball went out and bang, 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 someone else's space. You mentioned the fullbacks. Like, Robbo, he's going to have... Like, Old Trafford's a big pitch already, so he's going to have plenty of space to run into if that's the case. So I'm like you guys. I just think what we do well is going to be too much of a problem for them. And one other thing I was going to say, off the back of what you were saying about United and them getting up a head of steam and the crowd, all that kind of stuff. Like, this might be me tempting fate, but that really doesn't bother me. Like, seriously, you know why it doesn't bother me? The last two times we went there, they took the lead. They didn't win. Like,
yeah, fair.
Them having to come back is what they're good at. Like, them being in front is not what they're good at. So if it's one goal Man United lead, the last 20 minutes, I'm thinking Liverpool are going to win because let's not forget that 1-1 two years ago, we should have won that game. But we had the chances to win that game afterwards. So the psychology of United is clawing back something that they should never have given away in the first place becomes this great victory. I mean, Liverpool and Man United in the midweek, we let go of a two-goal lead. They clawed back a two-goal lead. We both won. Who's going to really feel better about that? I think it's us.
Absolutely. I have just realised it's Harriet who pulls the comments in, so apologies, Harriet. You're my fave. Nice talk about that. I'm just worried they won't get out of here alive, to be honest with you, Damien. But anyway, mm-hmm. Nice fun. It's all new to all of us, isn't it? David, midfield then. You'd expect for being able to come back in for the big game.
Yeah, it has to.
So who would you be playing alongside him?
Jordan. I think the third spot is open. It's interesting to see him, you know, Klopp doesn't mind going faith with a player, does he? You know, and is it? I don't know. Is Oxlade going to get that chance?
He did all right the other night, didn't he?
That's what I'm alluding to in the fact that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you wouldn't even be considering him as sixth in line or whatever. But a couple of injuries in and a decent performance away in the Lions den, and it's like, well, go ahead, lad, more of the same. I've got every faith in you, so that wouldn't surprise me, not one bit. I think it's about as likely as anything else, given the current availability of everyone. And it's an area of the pitch that we need to be in control of, because if we control it there, I mean, it's so hard, Liverpool's midfield, isn't it? You know, we've got the best goalie going, we've got the best attacking lineup, got the best fullbacks, got the best centre back, got a boss partner next to him. You know, you've got to look at somewhere where you think, is there any weaknesses or whatever? And those lads have to do so much work, and it might just be about the legs, and it might be about who's fresh. Do you know, and if you thought Milner was fresh enough to go through that and old man it right through there, then sound. So, you know, as long as you see Fabinho and as long as you see Henderson, I'm a little bit relaxed about who the third person might be. And I don't mind if it's Oxlade, for example. But and, you know, he's got to be right up for it. So here's his chance. I like the idea of Bobby starting before. You're talking about that because he can drop back into that midfield if it's all hands on deck. If they start like we want them to blow themselves out. So if you start like that, Bobby's more naturally suited to dropping back and giving us an extra body in midfield. And but equally, if you don't start like a house on fire, he's more likely to unpick a lock for us. And Jota off the bench, you'd never see me arguing with that because he's a real goal threat, isn't he? So there's a lot of options there for Liverpool. I don't think we should make too many changes. Fabinho is a must, an absolute must. I would be really worried about us if he didn't play. But if he plays, I think it would be... He's the epitome. If he plays well... Fabinho plays well on Sunday, Liverpool win. It's as simple as that because of what he's got around him.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good shout. Who are you going for in midfield, Emma?
Yeah, I'm kind of along the same lines as Damien. For me, it's absolutely Fabinho and Henderson. And then the third one, yeah, again, I was quite keen actually on Oxlade Chamberlain before. I was thinking about this at the start of the show just because I think his last couple of cameos have been really impressive actually off the bench. And I do think this kind of game is made for him, really. Where he's kind of, you know, he's given a bit more of a free role and a bit more of a creative role, and he's the kind of player that will take it on the edge of the box and just have a go, have a bit of a pop at goal, and, you know, silence the crowd a little bit, make them, you know, take a little bit of a step back and go, oof, that was a bit close. I think he's a type of player that could do that, but I also think Curtis is absolutely the same, and we've seen Curtis. I think his ball retention has just come on leaps and bounds as well over the last couple of months, so. Either one of those two, I'd be happy with. But it wouldn't surprise me if Klopp sticks with Naby, just because, like you say, he wants to keep that fluidity in midfield. And if he's already making one change in terms of bringing Fabinho in, then yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. But if it was up to me, it would be Oxlade Chamberlain would get my vote.
Quite a lot of shouts for Curtis in the chat here, Mo. Nandan saying he'd start him along with Fabinho and Henderson. The Wolfman going for the same midfield. Ethic boxing, Fab, Hendo and Kurt. It just shows how highly regarded he is by our fans now, you know, all over the world. And, you know, people who appreciate him. And also the fact that you won't be surprised at all if the manager throws him in.
No, I wouldn't. And I think it's all down to his level of fitness. If he's able to start, ready to start, I would not be surprised at all. To be honest, I have him ahead of Ox in the queue. I do agree that his last two performances have been encouraging, but I do think there has to be context there. Obviously, we were playing against 10 men midweek, and so we were playing against a team that aren't going to be threatening from an attacking perspective as much as we expect Man United to. As I mentioned earlier, I am still a little bit worried about Henderson's engine. So with that in mind, I would want someone with a bit more energy to be the third man. So I take Curtis over Ox in that context. If Curtis isn't fully fit, then I've got no problem with Naby. I think that, well, I say I've got no problem with him. As I mentioned earlier, there is the concentration thing. Hopefully someone can sit him down and just be like, you know, maybe explain, maybe he doesn't know about Manon. Maybe they don't have that in Guinea or in Germany. I don't know. But again, if Naby starts, I would expect him to play well. I think he can play well in this fixture. I would probably go Fab, Hendo, Curtis. But I would say, if this game wasn't Man United, I'd probably be resting Henson.
Okay. Off to learn what Manon is in German. just shout at the weekend. But before all that, Damien, are they going to win on Sunday?
Yeah. I am confident, yeah. Like I say, I do respect them, like I say, but I respect Liverpool more.
Absolutely. Emma, are they going to win?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I just can't see past a Liverpool win, to be honest. If Liverpool turn up, like I said before, if Liverpool turn up, then 3 points are theirs.
What do you reckon, Mo?
We're going to win. The only thing I'm not sure about is whether or not they'll score. I think they might. As I said, they took the lead in the last two, so I wouldn't be surprised if they do. We've obviously got to factor in as well. I know we don't like talking about those things, but the ref. Like, madness happens in those scenarios.
The referee from Greater Manchester.
Yes, that's the fella. So we can't rule out a goal that comes from weird circumstances, but we score three away from home. It's what we do. So 3-0, 3-1. Take your pick.
I'll just say, basically, I mean, my dad used to, God rest his soul, used to manage our football team, and he'd always build a team, and he'd say, get a team that can score three goals, because there's always the unstoppable shot, and there's always the cock-up. So you can't legislate for everything, but Liverpool are good at scoring three goals away from home, aren't they? Let's take that encouragement. We have got enough tools in our box to deal whatever they throw at us. So as long as we're on form, we're better than them. And on Sunday, we're going to prove it.
Is right. Love all that. Chris Brack's been on as well, saying Man Oof is a German for Man On. So there we are. I'm off to shout Man Oof in motel to let Mo know that Craig's on his way to pester him.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's very handy, actually. And Josh as well. Like, Josh, he's been slipping of late. Like, he likes to act like he's the cool, responsible one. But yeah, Josh, I'm on to you.
Manoof tonight, Mo. Let me tell you, Manoof all about. Listen, hope you enjoyed the weekend. Steve on the comments before was encouraging everyone to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. I agree with Steve. It's a fantastic time to do so. The content this weekend is going to be lit. Let me tell you, tomorrow, Fuad has put together a compilation of Anfield Wrap post-match shows from all our wins against Manchester United, which is as beautiful and as sexy as Fuad himself. So you want to get onto that tomorrow. And then on Sunday, we've got the bus. It's the Kiev / Madrid bus going to Manchester, which is hopefully a bit more achievable in terms of the toll on our bodies. But yeah, we've got the bus on Sunday because we want to make some really, really good content both before and after, hopefully after the big Liverpool win. So yeah, it's a brilliant time to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe to do so. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to Damien. Thanks to Mo and thanks to Emma. Thanks for you guys for joining on the live chat. Enjoy your weekend. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.